again, I'll fill it good.
Hey, hey, that might cost $300.
Didn't you know that I'm a good person? I'm your angel through and through. Doesn't it show that I'm a good person? So much gooder than you, and you, and you, and you, and you. I'm a good person, that's my thing. My nickname is Mother Teresa Luther King. Best. Hashtag humble and blessed. Newsflash fuckwads, I'm a good person. Do what I can for you all the time. That's how I am, cause I'm a good person. I always find time to be kind.
Sorry, so busy.
I'm a good, such a good, real good person. I'm a good person through and through. I'm a good, such a good, real good person. Let me hear you say it too.
Kill your husband. I'll do it. I'll gut him like a fish.
You're a good person.
Oh, thank you.
I'm a good, such a good, real good person. I'm a good person. Yes, it's true. I'm a good, such a good, real good person. I'm a good person. Get it?
Fuck you!
Welcome back to Questions We Don't Have Answers. In the interest of separating ourselves from all the awful men out there in the world, we continue our series of, I don't know, it's like morality of self and masculinity and all that stuff. Mm. Obviously, well, today we're recording on Louis C.K.'s day. He was officially outed as it's hard to label sex criminal, certainly, maybe.
Yeah, like the recent revelations of, you know, Hollywood's sex offenders.
Mm-hmm. It just keeps happening. That's the thing. And therefore, my name is Harrison Shute, and joining me, as always,
the ever-loving blue-eyed thing, Donovan Morgan Grant.
And this is the title. I already said the title. Damn it. Question for today, am I a good person? And I don't mean am I a good person, but, you know, generally speaking for myself, Donovan, and you, dear listener. We're going to hash out what that means, especially in the context of today, specifically today. You know, because I think when we left off previously on Questions We Don't Have Answers, we were talking about, you know, that kind of misogyny industrial complex that Hollywood is, and that all is just constant in America. And how sometimes in these situations we may feel kind of indicted in these crimes, but maybe because we didn't speak up, or because we feel those same urges that have led to higher profile cases of sexual violence, or what is the other acronym, IPD or something like that. And then in terms of, you know, higher profile, like maybe we've done things like that on our own terms. You know, on a few episodes back we talked about our not me too, but I have. Donovan and I disclosed some very private details that we probably didn't imagine we would be talking about when we started the podcast. And it took me a long time to like post that on Twitter with that hashtag. And I was shocked that I didn't lose a single follower. And actually somebody liked it, which I don't know what that means. But so
I didn't even see it.
Yeah, I tried to. I tweeted it at like 1:38 a.m. No, not really. But
and then you retweeted so many other things to push it down.
Yeah, exactly. No, I think I did try to like leave it up there, but you know, I don't have too much profile. But yeah, I mean, so that's kind of I think that's kind of what I've been thinking about is, you know, are there parameters for kind of like self acceptance as guy, really? And even if you're not a guy, you know, how do you accept yourself? Because I feel like people listening are probably naturally self-loathing people. Just that's how it always is with people on the internet looking for podcasts to listen to. I don't know, there's some weird correlation there, but you know, I get it. So how do we define our good, and how do we think about ourselves as good people, I guess. And so, Donovan, I would ask, like, What are some of your parameters for, I guess, self-acceptance and like self-praise? Like, how have you thought of yourself, or what are your like goals that you kind of live by every day in terms of, I want to be a good person in your everyday?
This will be a very interesting episode. I guess for me, I guess it is something that like I try to, that is sort of in my head, at least a couple of times a day, unless, you know, it's a kind of an uneventful day, but it's usually in my interactions with people. I was actually talking to my mom earlier today when we were out at lunch. We had, you know, a server came by, and I think someone had, you know, the guy had forgotten to like ask us something. He kind of went away, and mom went on this, you know, kind of like spiel about, you know, oh, he's a lazy worker because this and that, whatever. And I was like, well, you know, don't dwell on that, because, you know, it is, being working in at restaurants is the worst, one of the worst jobs in the universe. And I remember just saying, like, you know, you should treat people at, like, you know, at their lowest, whatever, or, you know, you'll be remembered for how you treat people at their lowest rather than their highest, whatever, which is some sort of platitude that I heard before. And she's like, oh yeah, that's a good thing to going. And it's one of those things where, like, I kind of operate on, you know, making people feel good about themselves. I've been in school where I've been teased, and I was never really bullied, because I did get to get into fights, but I was never really, like, kind of bullied. I never really let myself be bullied, but I would be teased by stuff. I would be kind of on the outs, and rather than kind of let that, you know, reflect into how I'm going to treat other people, although I'll get to that, like, I try to take in consideration how people, you know, what kind of time they're having, and I try to be nice. I try to be kind of considerate. When I'm dealing with, you know, a worker, like, you know, when I'm the customer in a situation, I try to be pleasant and not really kind of give them a hard time, because I've been on that situation where customers will just treat you like crap, you know, because, you know, they can get away with it. I've been in very, very embarrassing situations because of that. I try to do that. But, you know, but at the same time, you know, we all have tempers, you know, especially when it comes to people that we're close to. I think it's much easier to be mean to people that we love than it is with people that are strangers, unless you are just a real type of jerk person who are just mean to everybody. Like the other day, like, my mom's, you know, she has Parkinson's and she's trying to drive again, and, you know, she keeps on messing these turns, and I just, like, snapped off and yelled at her, and I immediately apologized, but I knew that, like, that did wonders for her anxiety, which she gets from Parkinson's, and I just made her the rest of her night worse. And it's one of those things where, like, you know, like, even a small type of indulgence can lead, you know, towards catastrophic consequences for other people, and you kind of have to keep it in check. You know, it's healthy to be angry at stuff, and it's healthy to be, you know, to express negative emotion, but you got to do it in a way which you're going to have the least amount of negative effect towards other people. And I think you just have to be considerate of other people and not really seek gratification at the expense of other people. Now, that being said, do I think I'm a good person? I don't know. Because if I say yes, then that speaks to an end of a journey, does it not? Where I feel I have everything figured out. And as every month kind of demonstrates, that's never the case. I mean, it is a kind of, you know, that like never-ending journey, but at the same time, there's always learning things. There's always, you know, interpersonal hang-ups and, you know, how would I really feel if this situation happened to me? How would I really act? And I don't know. I mean, by the end of this conversation, there might be a thing that I might, the surprise twist might be that, like, I'm like the worst villain on the podcasting circuit of all time. Oh, yeah, I forgot that I killed that family.
Yep. They were a rival podcasting family.
Before it even began. The secret prequel. But I think that, like, I've been thinking about this too a lot, and there's been a lot of, like, you know, moral relativism going on, especially on the internet, when it comes to, like, you know, people in politics, and how politics has been stratified where, you know, it's not Democrat and Republican anymore, it is good versus evil. And, you know, there's always sort of these concessions between perspective and, okay, but come on, guys, they're Nazis. And it's like, we don't know anymore. I mean, we know, but at the same time, we don't know. And it's been frustrating and sad and annoying, and I hate it. I don't want to talk about it anymore. I mean, you introduced the topic, but, like, did you get into, like, your personal viewpoint for being a good person, or would you care to repeat it again? Because I forgot.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really speak to it too much, but I mean, I actually remembered, like, why I thought that this was a good question to ask, and it's because I think when it does come to that good and evil binary, for us who, you know, we think of ourselves on the side of good, and how could we not? The opposition is so, you know, in line with a certain idea of archetypal villainy that we've understood.
Yeah,
you know, that's
exactly it. Well said.
But I think that, you know, I mean, a lot of this podcast has discussed, like, the various infighting among, you know, the good side and all that, you know, call-out culture and things of that nature. And I think that self-reflection is so important for when you think, like, oh, of course I'm on the good side. Like, I care about people. I helped an old lady across the street who was super old and deaf. But, you know, maybe that's not quite enough. Or maybe there are things that you're using certain politics as a deflection against some of your, in a lot of cases, baser urges, because a lot of this is going to be gendered. I mean, it's just, I think that a question, not to be like so like self-reflexively analytical or whatever. I mean, I am pretty obsessed with myself, which is kind of the problem with me. But I think a question like this does kind of stem in an anxious way from a lot of the developments that have been going on since we started this podcast, which is like, you know, for me personally, like just being kind of a more active internet being. I would say that like most of my life happens on the internet nowadays. It's probably like a 25-75 split. Wait, that's not math. Yes, it is. 37. That's what people usually do. Right. Just because my life is just like physical life is just so like regular, and I don't have a lot of human contact, but I do have more contact with people who I meet once a year in San Diego, perhaps. and then the other thing is the kind of recent things going on both in Washington and in Hollywood, the coastal elites blowing up and revealing themselves as awful, and being that kind of exemplary for implicit bias, and how that is such a horrifying, like Lovecraftian black hole that you don't know when you're a bad person or if you're a bad person, because especially in the society we live in, which rewards sexual assault and all that thing, with, for example, the presidency, but also with, you know, just no sense of punishment in so many cases, because again, we just don't understand it. But yeah, so for me, in response to that, and in response my whole life, I guess, I guess there is a good start where I have always been kind of attuned to bad, the idea of bad things and the idea of suffering, partly because I had an interesting upbringing, a very like stable, solid adoptive family. But my sister, who is also from Korea, she wasn't a problem child. I think she still has like some psychiatric things that she's working through now as an adult. But every day of her life, she cried, which doesn't sound like that bad. But it was like screaming, crying, booming through the windows. Like we would have to go and close all the windows because my next door neighbor would be like, Maggie was crying again. And for like nothing, like she didn't, I mean, I don't want to like, you know, talk about my sister like that, but, it was, you know, it's just a thing that I guess kids might do, but I did listen to the sound of crying every day for the first maybe 15 years of my life. And I became very, conscious about the effects that people had on one another, just through that. I saw how she could kind of exert influence because there was always that like big red button of, this person could have a meltdown. And I didn't want to be like that. However, that doesn't mean that like I learned anything. It was just like, I can kind of recognize when people are doing things that other people don't appreciate, perhaps in an alarming, profound way. And then as I got older, I think it was always an academic understanding of, I know how to be a good person. Like I know what that entails. I know what entails listening, and being empathetic. But I don't know how to bring myself to that point. And you know, I never really thought about why, or it never occurred to me that I wasn't kind of living up to those ideals, but throughout high school and earlier and in college, I guess, up until like, you know, I don't know, yesterday, it was always about like indulging, like you were saying, but in different things. Like I was always, if not the main character of my story, the most interesting character and the one who mattered the most, whether, you know, however that manifested. And it's kind of shocking, to truly try to reconcile the experience of a woman, for example, or a non-American, that like, you know, they don't always get like first choice on every decision, that is their way, but that's how I had always lived my life. And when that comes at the expense of other people, you know, I didn't realize it essentially until recently. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that it's not hard to understand what it takes, but it is very hard to implement. And I think that my dearth of contact with people doesn't help, because it's that's the test. It's good to be around people and to speak with people on a regular basis, because they test you by being shitty, like you are maybe, or like I am maybe. But that is kind of grooming your tolerance by, you know, because I mean, I get very like stressed out easily by people. But again, like all of the good qualities that I kind of exude are, I don't know, like academic in a sense, or almost like quantitative. Like I've been donating monthly to organizations since November, things like that. I always try to support people however I can. But like, what do I do in a kind of person-to-person sense? So yeah, I think there's, I guess it's kind of about like trying to identify, trying to identify, period, perhaps. I don't know.
That's very interesting. Yeah, what you said about like, you know, like being like kind of the main character of your own story, at least the most interesting. I've had that thought in my head, I think, all my life. I actually remember that since I was a kid, just because it was a more interesting way to view my life. And like as of late, I'm like, you know, well, I don't know a lot of like, you know, people of like this background or trans people or whatever. Like how would I interact with them on the daily, you know, and how would that interaction, you know, kind of manifest? Because I can remember like you know, I've mentioned before on this podcast, but like I thought to myself I'd be very, at one point earlier in my life, I thought myself to be a bit pretty gay-friendly guy. I mean, I had coworkers who were gay. I had a boss who was gay, and I thought nothing of it. But when a gay guy hit on me, I really reacted badly to that, you know. And I kind of reminded myself, oh, I you know, I'm nowhere near as congenial towards certain people as I like to tell people I am. You know, I remember going on this date with a girl, and she kind of referenced that she's bisexual in a very kind of like kind of non, you know, informative way, because it's kind of a natural way, and I remember kind of like shirking at that, like, you know, who does she think she is, kind of way, and then like, you know, I think like weeks later I was like what was my problem, you know, there's always these moments where it's like I'm fine, and then like when I interact with certain people of a different, you know, type of background than me, it's always kind of revealed to be this type of, you know, actually no, I'm just as bad as every other, you know, stereotypical mainstream character, even though I'm a black guy, you know, even though I'm not part of that type of mainstream, I'm still part of a type of mainstream, and I don't want this conversation to come down to your basic liberal arguments, because it is more beyond that, because that is kind of how it limits itself. I guess that's how I've limited my brain, but I think like how you say interaction with different people is one thing. I'm always very much, at least, you know, hypothetically, against stereotypes, so I'm always kind of mindful of how I view somebody. You know, like if I remember in one of my, I think it was, I took a speech class in college, and there was this girl from, I believe it was China, with a very thick Chinese accent, and I try to tell myself, you know, all right, don't suppose anything of her. I don't know her story. I don't know what's going on, so I'm not going to go in there with any sort of presumption as to how she'll interact when I ask her, you know, if she is ready for this next test or whatever. It's kind of very self-aware, kind of stupidly self-aware. Because you never know how people are going to respond to that. or how you're supposed to, you know, not offend them. But I think that's the thing, too, because like, you know, once you start getting too sort of precious over certain things, then you're kind of being, then you are kind of, you know, being, you're not being a bad person, but you are kind of, you know, I guess at one point it's, is it, when does, you know, the consideration for one person and the consideration for yourself begin? I remember I was at this minority meeting for students freshman year of college, and there's this girl with, like, I'm not sure what the term to use is. It's dwarfism. She was a little person, and she was talking about how, you know, how she doesn't always need help reaching for some things, and people always kind of get it for her. That's kind of annoying. And it's one of those things where, like, I guess when you would interact with somebody, you would learn how to interact with them in that way, where, you know, what they would like and what they wouldn't like, and how they would be good to interact with other people. And I guess in some ways you can't really help that if you want to be a good person, because not everybody is close to everybody. You know, people in a very segregated part of the world, or people in a very, you know, kind of monochromatic part of the world, they can't really help that. But I guess in that instance, that's where, you know, gentrification should end, and, you know, integration should begin. I didn't really enjoy high school until I started working after school, and, you know, kind of interacted with people of different backgrounds and stuff. And that's when I just felt like I was living my life more, because I was experiencing, you know, the flavor of variety. But I don't know. I mean, it's interesting. I'm sure there's always deep, dark secrets we can reveal ourselves. But, like, in terms of, like, am I a good person or am I a bad person? I don't know. I guess it would be egotistical for me to say that I'm egotistical, but, like, it's one of those things where I'm worried. I don't want this conversation to kind of end up being egotistical, but you kind of can't help that at the same time. And I'm kind of at a loss to how to really investigate it without, like, I'm worried about not thinking of a certain avenue and just end up being egotistical in this question of figuring out if we are good people or bad people. And I don't know of a way to help that, and I'm not sure who would be able to figure that out or parse that out. I mean, they're certainly not here, but, like, you know, when we're on the internet and we're talking and we're seeing people talk about their experiences online, there is a type of, I don't want to say sameness, but, you know, as human beings, there is a universality of experiences, even if they are different from person to person. And so I guess, instead of worrying about missing a step, we should kind of just accept that, like, you know, there is enough sameness for us to kind of, you know, reach over the bridge and start to communicate in a way which we can understand. And with some people, you know, in determining whether they're good or bad, I guess if you were to label a bad person, that would be a refusal to understand, like a flat-out refusal to understand based on values that wouldn't harm anybody. Because I guess, you know, where we would draw the line is if, you know, is if a neo-Nazi says, oh, come on, I don't mean anybody. I just think that we should be separated by races. And if we're not, then violence should occur. You know, it's just that kind of thing. Or, like, you know, like Richard Spencer talking to W. Kamau Bell, like, you know, he's talking to him, he's fine. He's like, I don't have anything against you. I just don't want you living in my city. And that's just, like, you know, that's just not positive thinking. And I think that kind of, that is the line where we want to draw, where, you know, where we're denying people certain things. That to me is my sign of, okay, well, you're a bad person, full stop. I don't really care what you think, because, you know, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few, and stuff like that.
Yeah, gosh. I mean, when it comes to, like, Nazis online and things like that, it has been troubling just because, I mean, Nazis, like, in general, like, what the fuck?
Yes.
That is not an American tradition. But it's also because, like, it does provide, I mean, it's essentially the oldest Nazi thing in terms of how Americans, or how American media at least, has viewed him, which is dispensable first-person shooter villain that you can shoot in Castle Wolfenstein or Call of Duty 2 and not feel anything, which has been fine. I mean, I think it was Call of Duty Black Ops that introduced the idea of Nazi zombies in terms of, I mean, that's always been a thing, but in terms of, like, really popularizing it. And that's just doubling down, I mean, on things that are easy to shoot at because they are completely dehumanized. The Nazis are dehumanized by their politics, zombies by their undeadness or what have you. both have some relation to the occult. And it's and when it comes to the internet in the modern day, it's like they are very easy to dismiss, and that's fine. But it does. It's just it's. I don't know. It's not like it's. I guess it is uncomfortable. Not because Nazis should not be dismissed or worse, but because it's like when you are more interested in building bridges generally, you are kind of seen as a centrist, and so it's on us to kind of draw that distinction between what we want and centrist politics, which is, you know, it is pretty dumb. I mean, yeah, it's hard because the idea has always been that humanity can be reunited in a way that is kind of the macro of perhaps the American experiment. But then you have, I mean, essentially foreign invaders in the sense of Nazis and Russians or Soviets and the KKK, who I guess were homegrown. So that's hard. You know, that is hard. But yeah.
Well, I mean, going about talking about the centrist thing, like you said, like, you know, they're operating from a point where, like, you know, they're trying to look at both sides. They don't favor a side. They are open to arguments. But like what they've been characterized as are people who are just unwilling to commit to either an ideology or, you know, certain issues. Like I think a centrist would tell people that, you know, they don't get caught up in the squabbles of the two main sides. But what people recognize from them is that as an unwillingness to kind of really consider either side. And I guess in that way, there is a miscommunication on both ends, or lack of or refusal to listen to the centrist. But I mean, the way that you characterize it is sort of, you know, sort of this sort of like limp, not so much limp wristed, but, you know, this sort of this person who doesn't really care to enact any positive change at all. They're kind of, you know, they're comfortable with what they might believe slightly, but not really interested in doing anything but what they think is right or wrong. And I don't want to characterize the centrist as that, but I think that there is those type of people who may exist out there. And at that point, because it's kind of, it reminds me of like what Stephen Colbert said when Jon Stewart first took over the Daily Show, and Colbert said, like, you know, Stewart actively wanted to make the show more political, and Colbert realized that, like, Stewart was asking, like, what are your politics, and he didn't really know, and it was through that where Colbert realized that his politics leaned more liberal, and now you see him on his nightly show, where he's very, very, I mean, he is like one of the loudest anti-Trump late night hosts, and it's one of those things where it's like is that political? Not really, because Trump isn't necessarily political. He's just in that instance, it is kind of, you know, evil and stupidity in the America that's fighting against it. But it's one of those things where you kind of recognize how that can be caught up, how that can be categorized under the sort of, you know, the label of politics. And I feel that like the Trump administration has been pretty. In some ways, it's been good for America to kind of recognize what the line is that they'll draw, you know, and what really is, you know, kind of, you know, the bridge too far, and, you know, as more time goes on, there's more people kind of recognize that. Thankfully, you know, Virginia seems to have recognized that, I think that asking these sort of questions can be seen as, I guess, you know, kind of like, you know, messing with the bee's nest or whatever, where, like, you know, there's a sort of resignation that, you know, America or people are inherently good. And I don't know. Like, what do you think that way? Do you believe that people are inherently good? Is there a sort of a default morality, or is reality more kind of messed up less optimistic than that, I should say?
I mean, I'm not sure, and I'm not sure how interesting my answer to that very large question would be, but I think that honestly, as human beings or something, or as socialized Americans, I'm not really sure, but that's kind of how our minds work anyway, that there is a bounding box of morality that we must adhere to, even if we like individualize it ourselves, that there's always something shared, I guess. Because I feel, I mean, when it comes to that discussion of Nazis and centrists and things like that, like those are parameters for internet liberals. And like we don't want to be either one. You know, is there space for pacifism when people are dying? Like, those questions are haunting, because I don't, like, do you feel pressure to like align yourself with somebody when they kind of speak out against something? Like, you know, for me, that's like always been Lexi Alexander, and I feel like I haven't mentioned her in a while just because I've maybe a little self-conscious about that, but like whenever she
she's right behind me, isn't she?
I mean, she would be. She's pretty violent or whatever. I don't know. She likes to show videos of her kicking people. But, you know, I mean, she talks about, like, PEPs, which is, like, Progressive Accept Palestine. And I, like, oh, yeah, like, I, that's one area that I, as an American, have no idea. Like, that's a pretty tough one, because I don't really understand the whole Israel versus Palestine thing when it comes to Americans. Because I feel like one cannot contain the other, but whatever. I mean, I'm not going to try to talk to that. But, you know, whenever she says something on Twitter, there's like, am I with that or against that? And the clock is ticking. Make a decision. That kind of pressure. Like, do you kind of feel that with people?
You know, I kind of fight against that, because I kind of fight against that. You know, that sort of like guillotine level sort of morality test, because I feel that like people who do that. The fact that they're blasting that, I mean, I know that I did that to you on our Fighting Nazis episode, where it was like, you know, if there was a protest right now, what would you do? You know, because I was pretty angry. But, so sorry. But, I don't like that online, because it feels more like grandstanding and,
I don't
want to say virtue signaling, because that's a trendy term, but like, it does feel like sort of like, you know, like I'm on this side, not on this side kind of thing, where like, It feels like a smug expression of, you know, I'm on this side, rather than individuality. And I understand that that's not necessarily what it is. It is an anger towards the obviousness of morality. But I don't like it, because it doesn't feel like it's interested in bringing people together. It feels like it feels too separatist. And so, like, you know, I'm trying to think if there's ever been a situation where I feel. I guess the closest thing would be, and I've talked about this before, that like, you know, the idea that comic books and superhero comic books are really, I mean, they have really troubling politics in terms of like, you know, potential fascism and all kind of stuff. That's been around for almost a century. You know, the idea that like, you know, if you really kind of think about it, you know, like they're pretty white supremacist, historically, and you know, how effective are black characters in comic books, that kind of stuff. And I'm like, yeah, but I don't really care to let that bother me, because I can kind of accept it for what, you know, what they're trying to do rather than what they accidentally do. And, you know, recognize also the pains that current creators and creators of color are making kind of rectify that. I don't see it as a lost cause, so I don't care. But in terms of other stuff, like, I don't, you know, I recognize that people are facile and fallible, and they don't really... One person that might align with my politics perfectly doesn't automatically mean that they are going to be perfect forever, and I should look up to them. Like, you know, Captain America doesn't really exist in real life, so I shouldn't necessarily bow towards his politics. I'm not really concerned about that. And I'll disagree with people even if I think that, like, you know, maybe they're right. I feel that, like, maybe even if they're right about something, it might not be the right time to talk about it. And those issues aren't always necessarily the height of importance, but, like, you know, I've lately come in to realize that I don't mind if I just disagree with people that I generally agree with, because, I don't know, I feel confident in my own individuality to kind of not feel pressured by somebody to say, are you with us or against us? And I'm like, well, President Bush, you know, I don't want to talk about it that way. I don't necessarily... I'm not on the same wavelength when it comes to, you know, picking sides. So I don't feel that way. What about you?
I mean, I think I would agree, but I mean, there is that pressure of remaining individual or kind of being seen as perhaps the enemy. And it's just, I mean, it is that same, you know, Bush administration logic, but unfortunately, like, what we have in front of us is kind of a hive mind of, of liberace. I don't know.
What. Liberace. I mean, I feel that like I've done that to people too. Like when the Charlottesville stuff happened, I was pretty cutthroat. Whereas, like, yeah. I'm not playing around. If anybody's like, you know, like, well, you know, they were fighting for this statue. I was like, you can't be this stupid. Like, right. You know, it's like I don't really want to hear your, you know, poor white man arguments about how this, you know, people are taking this out of proportion, because that to me feels like you don't care to listen to what people are talking about. But that's me not caring what people are talking about. Although I feel informed. I mean, I'm always going, but Derek Ferguson, who's a pretty good podcaster and a novelist, has said, you know, it's not. You know, your opinion doesn't matter. Is your informed opinion matters? Is like, you know, it's just my opinion. You have to be informed about certain things.
Yeah.
And I always try to go about that. Although, you know, I'm inconsistent, but I try to.
It's hard, and I wish it was more in vogue. You know, education generally. I feel like I was watching an episode of TRL, which is not uncommon. I do that every day for my job. Another in the ongoing saga of I watch a lot of television I fucking hate. But
I'm so surprised it exists in 2017.
I know. It basically everybody has written about how it shouldn't and it doesn't. it's just so weird.
MTV shouldn't exist. MTV has nothing to do with music.
No, they were doing, so today's Thursday, Throwback Thursday. So one of the videos they showed was Snoop Dogg driving like it's hot. And they drop a lot of words now for censorship, and one of them was roll, and another one was weed. So they can't make references to drug use, they can't make references to sex, of course, they can barely make references to violence. It's really weird. It's like super sanitized and super like YouTube-y, and like, God, I hate it.
I remember very, very clearly, not only when that song dropped, but like the edited version. Because there's like, you know, there's a line about like suicide risk red, like that's cut out, and like, that's interesting, but like, you know, weed culture, not say weed culture, but like, you know, I feel that like weed is much more mainstream than it was 10 years ago, so I'm surprised that like,
yeah,
that's cut, but, because you know, I'll shut up in a second, but you know, listening to rap songs on the radio, you know, which are much more, I mean, they don't necessarily, it used to be like there'd be an edited cut, like different lyrics, but now they just kind of, you know, like woo out, like, you know, the N-word, and the B-word, all that kind of stuff, but like, it's but you can tell easily what they're saying, so they don't really care to hide it. They just kind of, you know, want to be the bare minimum of technicality in terms of, like, you know, what is being said. But go on.
As opposed to other TV where it's just like so – I mean, I'm constantly shocked by what the language I hear on various – but anyway. So yeah, it was actually funny on – I think it was yesterday where they had their little news segment, and Tamra Dia, God bless her, she carries that show on her shoulders. She opened with like talking about how like the Democrats won and – Virginia, New Jersey, and the first trans, you know, state governor, and people like applaud, whatever. And then they were talking. The next news story was Twitter expands its character limit to 280, and everybody was just going crazy, and like that really got the response, which was pretty funny. But you know, she was talking about how like it was the. I mean, obviously they were like pushing back on it because it's a new technology thing, and they were talking about how like, oh, you know, tweets are supposed to be like. You know, you just read them and you read them and you read them and they go fast. And and then the guy Matt Rife, a.k.a. Kate Beckinsale's boy toy, which is makes me a little nauseous.
What, is he like 19 or something?
Yeah.
No!
He's pretty young. He's not 19, I don't think, but he's like in his early 20s.
Okay.
Shit, what was I saying? Oh, yeah, he was talking about how he made this like really weird, like non sequitur statement where he was like, "I think trying to compete with Instagram because Instagram is winning right now." I don't really have an Instagram account, but I couldn't really speak to that. And Tamra was like, "Well, I don't know. I mean, I use Instagram for like pictures and stuff, but Twitter is actually where I get my news now. And like, if I hear about something, I'll go to Twitter and I'll just, you know, learn more about it." And seeing like this, you know. It's this ridiculous MTV production that will hopefully be canceled in short order, but it is very much trying to be of the moment and speaking to essentially the generation, I guess, after me.
The kids,
who are into like Lil Uzi Vert and like DJ Khaled and all that stuff.
One of those names I know, and one of them I don't.
Yeah, well, I heard a lot about both of them. Yeah, like, I kind of had this like another vision of like wouldn't it be cool if like kids were kind of into exactly what Tamara Dia was talking about, which is like if you hear something, just go on Twitter. Like, this is the same thing that I use to get in contact with my friends and occasionally like the random celebrity who will like one of my tweets and I'll have a heart attack, which is the experience of Twitter, I suppose. I don't know how that relates anymore. I mean, you probably didn't hear this, but we had like a half hour of me trying to figure out what the hell was the point of even bringing up TRL.
I think in terms of informed opinion, you know, the seeking information and using communication for that end.
Yes. I think that's part of the internet part of it, which is that we are in constant contact with other kinds of people. We have that ability or that capacity to be in that kind of contact. Unfortunately, the tools to do so, like Twitter is like super fucked, obviously, in terms of whether it's like whatever the blue mark. I don't really care about that. But, you know, all the like the people who have been banned from Twitter and the people who have not been banned from Twitter, it is a platform not unlike Facebook, which has like inadvertently supported Nazis and Russian influence. Like that sucks. Like this is like Twitter is I mean, it's a hyper cyberpunk branded thing, but it is also a very like universal utility for communication. And so there's good and bad. And I think it's just one of the arenas where self-reflection can kind of get lost, but it is also a perfect arena for self-reflection, because you're putting your persona out there. You're authoring it. You know, you're customizing your Commander Shepard for presentation to the larger world, where there are celebrities who might like your Twitter tweet, and wouldn't you want to impress them? But it is also just kind of a microcosm for society itself at once. It is this parallel thing, but it is also the same thing, I guess.
Well, it is a double-edged sword, because I'm thinking of people who have lots of followers, who have information on a topic or thoughts on a topic, and it's like, you know, sit down, kids. There's going to be a thread, and I never love that.
I always hate the people who like try to reply in between the thread. I hate that so much.
I'm reading here.
Yeah.
trying to think, because I'm thinking of situations where like today, like the new Doctor Jodie Whittaker, her costume came out, and you know. That was actually the first thing I saw this morning on Twitter, and you know, some of my buddies were talking about it, and we were talking. It wasn't like, you know, this sucks for this reason or this is here for this reason thread. It was like a back and forth between how fast is fan art going to happen? Apparently, like, not even the end of the hour, which is cool. But like it was, I enjoyed that conversation because it wasn't even sort of like, you know, like a final thought. It was sort of like, you know, a stream of consciousness kind of thing between several people. That was pretty. That like, you know, the subtext of that thread was, you know, people who enjoy each other's companies enjoy talking to each other about a certain thing that was not harmful, not political. But there are also things like I mentioned this, I think, a couple of episodes ago, where a guy tried to make a thread about, like, you know, like BVS, and I just had none of it and kind of just, you know, took that thread to kind of, you know, burn him to the ground and at the stake. But it's one of those things, I think it's one of those things where, like, if you're a good person, you will use that platform for good and not, you know, your indulgent ends. Of course, nobody thinks they're the villain of their own story, so they'll use it for vengeance, like I did, and call it good, or, you know, they'll just try to, you know, kind of, because I don't really make a lot of, like, because I don't you know, I don't have a lot of Twitter followers, really. I have way more quote unquote friends on Facebook, but like I you know, I don't really use it as a platform. I'm not that kind of guy yet. like if I were, I can't imagine myself speaking all that often, you know, like, and just kind of, you know, like talking to people, you know. Oftentimes, you know, I have a thought, you know, this is kind of a positive thought or an observation. It's, I'm not really, you know, I don't really write essays on social media, like, or, mm-hmm. you know, in social media apps or whatever. If it's right. an essay, it's a blog or a website for essays. And I think that, you know, there's also this conflict of actual factual information and, you know, citing your sources and fake news and all that kind of stuff, that right. I think the hunt for information is stronger than it was a year ago, but it's also much more deadly because there's a lot of blowback into what actually is real and not. Like, this is fucking nuts. Like last night, me and some friends were, like, you know, kind of just discovering at the same time that, like, one of the actresses from Smallville is apparently in, has been involved in this, like, you know, she's been, like, kind of, like, snatching up women for this, like, sex cult for a few years. And it's like, what? This can't be true. And, like, the information is dubious, but it has been picked up by several news sources that with a dubious background. But it's just one of those things where I immediately doubted it because it was so extreme. Why didn't I hear it on, like, you know, like the main websites, like Bleeding Cool or CBR or Newsarama or whatever. But it's one of those things where it's like, I don't know. I can't have the luxury to presume everything's true immediately. I really don't. I don't ever try to do that. But but at the same time, it doesn't take long for me to figure out whether it's true or not. And on that, it's just like, you know, what do I do? Do I just kind of write people off based on those reactions? Like all these celebrities kind of being outed as sexual abusers. I don't know those stories, but I don't automatically find them to be false either. You know, there's a paper trail of, you know, histories of abuses going back and stuff like that. And, like, the stuff with Kevin Spacey has been absolutely crazy. Like, I can't believe what happened with him and, like, you know, sort of for the love of money or whatever. I've never seen that happen before. Do you know about that?
No.
Like, he was going to be in this movie, and I've seen trailers for it in the theaters and all this kind of stuff. And they are reshooting his scenes with Christopher Plummer.
Yeah, and they want to open in December.
That's
which I
wild.
Maybe he wasn't in the movie that much, but yeah, I mean, people better snatch up those trailers that exist. I saw that in front of Blade Runner, I think, because I mean it was another Ridley Scott movie, and I was like, oh, Kevin Spacey looks boring as fuck, and then oh my god, now it's a thing.
Well, I mean, on the one hand, it's terrific that they're taking these allegations seriously.
Yeah.
But it's I guess it's the only hand. But well, I don't know. I don't know why I got on that tangent, but I guess information. It's like, yeah. What do you do with the information? You got to use it responsibly, and you got to use it to, you know. Obviously, you have to use it to further a greater end than yourself. Because I think that, like, you know, people will conflate their side with good and evil, and as with more confidence in them being good, does the ego kind of come in? You know, and like my buddy Josh found this asinine video, this anti-Hillary video that was it was honestly pretty funny, but like I could only stand so much of it because it was so smug in its moral rectitude, because it starts off with, like, you know, we thought that she was gone, and then like there's a scene of Hillary Clinton saying I'm back, and then you smash cut to, like, you know, riots in the streets and stuff, and I was like, this is gold. But it was just, you know, like I will show you why. And the reason I'll show you why is because of this. And the reason I know it's because of this. It's like, if this is really serious, we just cut to the fucking chase. Stop talking about yourself. So, you know, right away, you know, this person is an idiot. But, I don't know. It's just, you know, if we live in a world where morality is at the forefront of our survival, then people should, I think, people should act upon that with you know, rapidity and speed. But there's just, you know, that sort of, you know, like this is obviously wrong, not just they're obviously bad, that we do get your very kind of, you know, smug Bill Maher-esque liberal who just kind of turns, you know, the side of good into kind of, you know, just kind of another version of evil, because you're kind of gatekeeping and, you know, virtue signaling and all that kind of other stuff. So the answer then would be, don't, I don't know, like kind of be playing with your language, maybe, and kind of just not worry about shaming idiocy, I guess, but we kind of, shaming idiocy used to be the thing to kind of make morality obvious, but now, because, you know, people have no shame, that's been taken out of the equation, so what do we do now, because we're kind of in sort of this endless loop of ego and idiocy.
I know. It is. I mean, it is shameful, perhaps. I think that we should all read The Art of War, which I always try to read, but I feel like there should be a concerted effort to at least understand the enemy. Because I saw something yesterday on Twitter that was like, speaking in response to like Virginia and New Jersey that like we will replace you, and like I yeah. get it, like sure, but like understand that like that triggers them, that incites their hatred. So if you want to eliminate that hatred, that's not the way to go. But whatever. And also just to round back to the whole Twitter thing, like it is unfortunate. Like I'm pretty much like right there with you in terms of like, I don't want to be a guy who like has to have like a bunch of followers, but like I do want a career in, a creative industry at some point. So I need like Twitter, like provides you like a measure for audience that you kind of bring to the table. So I have had to make a little bit of a concerted effort towards that, but it sucks. It's actually not that bad. A little bit egotistical perhaps. And I always forget that I have like one or two people following me who I like really care about. So I just tweet like the same things that I always tweet. And then I'm like, oh shit. Like, oh fuck, you didn't just say that. Hopefully she didn't see or he, but yeah, I mean, so it's hard. And so in the beginning we said, you know, it's easy to know what's morally correct perhaps because the opposition is so obvious. And I think that a lot of it is, and this is something that I kind of understood gradually over time, but like, being a good person, I think is always, defined working backwards from other people. It is, brought about by listening and by empathy. And so when a new kind of person does arrive, how do you react to that person? And these days, you know, having lived through, you know, the systemic oppression of gay people culminating officially in 2015, but obviously still continuing, and then having trans rights be also overlapping that and still continuing to the day, like there's pretty much like it would be hard for me at this point to learn about some kind of new person with a new method of inconveniencing my status quo and be like, fuck you. Like, that's just not a reaction anymore. Which, you know, I mean, I think that like, maybe, I mean, that's like, where do you draw the line, I guess? Because, you know, I feel like gay people and trans people were thought of as like criminals and stuff back in the day. And so we have criminals now who we would be intolerant of, but that's okay because of certain things. And would that change? I don't know. But for whatever group, like it's – now I'm just repeating myself. But yeah, there's a difference between like academically understanding that a new type of person is no different than you on a certain level. But then expressing that in a meaningful way when tested. And so I guess maybe that's kind of the problem, is that men have not always been tested, especially like the male feminist, for example. You can read The Second Sex, but you can fail. Like, I mean, one of my like favorite Dave Riley lines from Fast Karate was like, you know, a lot of people like to point out that like video games are like the only interactive medium, but that's not true. Just because you're like pushing these plastic sticks and buttons, like if that's your definition of interaction, that's kind of facile. You can fail reading a book, and you can fail reading feminist texts and being a feminist, because when you are trying to court a woman, there are certain things that are now in conflict, because you want something on a biological level that maybe she isn't ready for, but you are, and then that's where you are made as a good person or a rapist.
Yeah, that's true. But I've been hyper aware, but like kind of how I interact with anybody lately now, especially now in my new job, where it's like, how can I? Not so much how can I, because I don't want to say that like I'm kind of just doing whatever I feel like up to this point, but it's just like, you know, like I'm kind of just considering like, you know, the worst case scenario as I'm like, you know, kind of looking up something on the computer and I kind of being as bland as possible. I was like, you know, I could end up just like this book could be really inappropriate. I could end up being fired. It's like, it's kind of like overreaction where it's like, you know, is this how I want to be? Is this how I'm so concerned about my own safety that it's, I'm recognized that, like, you know, my concern for the other person is just, you know, kind of falling in backwards towards a trend that's happening in Hollywood right now, which is really, really bad. And that's what we've talked about before, where it's like, you know, fearing, you know, like rape, like false rape accusations more so than, like, you know, rape happening in general towards other people. And that's the kind of thing where it's like, maybe you were never really sympathetic towards them in the first place. But I guess it's also like you say, you've said before, where it's just like kind of just practice good behavior and kind of, you know, practice consideration, not consideration or in place of consequence, but kind of just consideration as something that you might enjoy. And I guess also, you know, dictating our terms as to what is good and what is right and what is objective. I think that, like, you know, diversity is objectively good because there's a difference of interactions and you know, people, and that's also kind of crossing bridges that can kind of lead to harmony on a larger scale from the micro to the macro. You know, like equality is obviously good because nothing has ever been destroyed by equality. As long as equality kind of brings about the same learned benefits that are enjoyed by, you know, the majority. You know, those things we have come to understood. Now, maybe we've not understood. We understood their benefits. We've not understood how we get there because, oh, hey, gay marriage can be a thing in 2015. You know, oh, okay, you know, trans rights can be a thing someday.
Someday.
You know, it's that type of thing. We're you know, equal pay, you know, like Black Lives Matter. Oh, I don't like that. It's that kind of thing. You know, and I've really been salty because, like for some reason, we have to slag on Hillary Clinton after she's already lost an election a year later. Right. And it's like, you know, you couldn't leave Barack Obama alone for almost 10 years. And now it's just like, you know, this need to demonize, even when it's not really, you know, affecting you. All I see there is ego. I don't see any yearning to save the world. I just see... just like, you know, this insane, we have to be right, otherwise we'll be wrong kind of mentality. Because I feel, as heady and egotistical as this might sound, that if I learn that I'm wrong, sooner or later, and I will try as much as I can, I will eventually get on board with the program. Right. I might not like it, but, like, I've had enough experiences to know that, like, you know, if I learn that something is objectively the right thing, and then I will switch my line of thinking. It might suck. I might be doing it kicking and screaming, but I'll get there. And I'm a better person since I've gotten there. I don't want to say that, like, I don't understand why other people can't do that, because it does suck. But I know that there's there if people try. Now, what would make people try? Just, again, I would think consideration for other persons. And how to get to that person, or how to get to that perspective. It's tough. I mean, how you know, it's like that old Twitter thing. How do you, I don't know how to convince you that you should care about other people. I don't know how to do that.
Love that line. I mean, for me, I think that it's something that I came upon pretty recently, and it's so basic, but actually it happened a few years ago when that movie Unbroken came out, and I had may possibly complained about it to my friend Cassandra. I think it was Angelina Jolie's second movie, and it was about American prisoners of war.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so it takes place in Japan, and all the bad guys are Japanese. And I was like, I mean, I didn't really care, but I was like, you know, I wouldn't see that movie. And she said, you know, when I saw the trailer for that, I thought of you. And that was such a profound moment in a more, like, academic sense, even, because it's like, that is such an important measure of how to care for somebody is when you literally have somebody that you care about. So, you know, we talk about, like, surrounding yourself with the United Nations of representatives. And I've had that in spots over the course of my life, usually only like one person per group. Like, I've had one Indian friend. I've had like one trans friend, one woman friend practically. Plus, like, you know, I'm the son of a mother. And, I mean, you know,
I love that line.
It's so good. My favorite one was somebody was like, so Matt Damon sitting there thinking, he's like, I have four daughters, so that means I have, counts on fingers, four respect for women. But I mean, whether or not, I mean, because like having friends is not something you can always control, I guess, especially as a high schooler. But you know, I think that definitely helped me out in the early days. But to even like, cause even like the idea of friendships, at least for me, has really evolved, or just changed, I guess, to where, I mean, most of the people I consider friends these days, like I never see, people like, Donovan Grant. Yes, that's his name.
Oh, yeah.
Cassandra, who lives down the street. I could go and talk to her, but I just don't. My buddy JoJo pops in from time to time to talk about Marxist philosophy. I don't really care about that, but don't tell her. My buddy Lester, who's back home in Massachusetts, constantly talking about his future because he just has no idea. And we work through that sometimes. You know, and it's like that's kind of modern.
Cast.
Yeah, really. Yeah, really. But I mean, it's like the internet is that kind of go-between for all those relationships these days. And so also, and then there are, because like Donovan and myself, like our friendship was born through the content that we created, because Donovan reached out to me in response to a podcast I did, which was called The Planet Beyond Midnight X or something. <I don't know.
laughs> Let us never speak of it?
Yes, we have to never speak of it. He's a huge fan of this show. I was like, I think he's pretty much the only reason why I even got to 100 episodes. But you know, that's what we like bonded over. We bonded over science fiction, Ghosts in the Shell, Evangelion, all that stuff. And that's new, because for me, like my earliest childhood or my earliest friendship was with my next door neighbor, AJ, and we had a lot in common. But we, at the end of the day, we were very archetypally different. I was a nerd, and he was like one of the I don't know if jocks are like rated like this, but he was like one of the top jocks in school or something like that.
The bros.
Exactly, he's such a bro. But he like really, he was like such a nerd in like a very pure, beautiful way, like an unironic way that even I was not like. He had. He really valued his like DVD collections of the original Star Wars trilogy and the Godfather trilogy, and Gears of War was his big franchise. Like, he loved Gears of War. He bought the collector's edition of Gears of War 2, and it came in this like very special like tin like that folded out, and he would like, you know, it was cool. But yeah, ultimately, like in high school, we just didn't. I mean, we would never talk like in the hall, just because we had our own friend groups, and they never ever mixed. Which is cool, but then you kind of reach 2017, and I'm friends with Donovan, and like we would never have met under a normal circumstances. Like 50 years ago, there would just no reason for it. And so that's the basis of a friendship, and is online. And so that kind of opens up the spectrum to other kinds of relationships where I don't know. I mean, I would consider this Dave guy to be my friend. We're mutuals on Twitter, but we don't really talk that often. And then there's somebody like Rachel Bloom, who is not a friend of mine, obviously, but she is that kind of person that I think of when it comes to women and Jewish people, because I never really like thought about Jewish people before. But which I mean, that's just like, you know, low-key anti-Semitism, of course.
Yeah.
But when it comes to like people like Kate Winslet has a line in Steve Jobs where she's like, "Do you think I grew up in some like 1930s shtetl?" And it was just like such a basic Jew line that Aaron Sorkin would write. It's just like that's like so unpracticed. But yeah, I mean, now I think about Rachel Bloom and when it comes to issues of women, like I mean, like months ago, not really so much anymore. Now it's just now hopefully I've kind of come over that. But I think that that's kind of a good entry point is to like when these big news stories break and women are coming forward with stories or guys are coming forward with stories about how they were raped when they were younger. Do you have somebody in your life? And I remember saying this exactly on the Battle Beyond Planet X. But you know, do you have somebody in your life who you think to when that happens? And that can kind of open up a consideration, I guess. Not so much like put yourself down firmly on something partisan, but humanize a conflict, I guess.
That's very interesting, and I think that like even more so than interest, like kind of shared, I guess shared, not interest, not expression, but I guess shared perspectives, like kind of shared observations maybe, might even lead kind of the friendships. Because like you mentioned Ghost in the Shell and Evangelion. I would not have gotten into either of those if it weren't for your show and what you said about those things. I mean, I did like Ghost in the Shell, the movie, but I didn't really understand it.
Nobody does.
But yeah, I kind of, you know, I wouldn't watch Standalone Complex because of you, and I would not have kind of watched basically everything I've seen from it. I don't even know if I would watch the film because if it wasn't because of you.
Well, you would have been better off, I guess.
Or picked up the novelization.
Oh my god.
Chapter 3, Inner Universe.
Yes,
as an inside joke, but I mean, like I had a similar friend, the friend you mentioned. From school, I changed schools when I was in fifth grade to a Catholic school, and we didn't really have the same interests. I was a total nerd. I was you know, getting into anime when I was in junior high. You know, I read comics. And I was not shy about it, and they kind of brought about scorn. Although they didn't bring out their friends, but like I had this one friend who wasn't really into that kind of stuff, but like, you know, he. I don't know. Like, we had the same classes, and we kind of, you know, made, you know, entertain each other. We became friends pretty early on. You know, I think we had a shared love of The Simpsons, which is fun.
Nice.
And so, while we kind of ran into, because he was a pretty popular guy. You know, easy with the ladies, and you know, he was in all these kind of sports, and I was less so. But we always kind of had this kind of like ongoing kind of unnamed kind of friendship going on. You know, we kind of go through high school together. And after high school, we kind of, you know, kind of knew that would be it, and you kind of wouldn't really see each other again. You know, and then, like, you know, after college, there was sort of this sort of unofficial five-year reunion where we kind of meet each other again, and it's really, really heartfelt, and we really enjoy catching up with each other. And kind of really kind of make good on the sort of building up friendship we had since, like, 1999. And then, like, most recently at the 10-year reunion, kind of see each other again, and we kind of really kind of put to words exactly what we mean to each other, you know, even though we are very different. And I kind of recognize, maybe more so than he does, how different we are. There is a very real friendship despite all of that difference. Just kind of, even because I feel that, like, I mean, we probably have different politics, and we probably have different, like, you know, perspectives on certain things, but it doesn't really kind of come out. It's just this sort of shared perspective and kind of the shared growing experience that we have that I'll always value. And I'll always, like, you know, I won't really throw that away, you know, when doomsday arrives. And then I kind of consider, you know, people who I find to be who I relate to much closer and stronger to me, like, you know, like you and people like Stella, who's never been on the show, but she's written on the show, and guys like Tony, people that I've met online and then later in real life, where those were shared interests, but even more so, those were shared, you know, kind of like the ambition of our voices, you know, podcasters, I guess, but like podcasters can kind of find company in each other because we have the same yearning to kind of, you know, get our voices out in a sort of, you know, structured format to really understand each other and kind of understand why we like certain things, kind of understand how we understand certain things. Not saying that podcasts aren't necessarily the princes of the universe or anything like that, but like
what? They're not.
Queen lied to me, but yeah, we're immortal, but I think that, like, that is a, you know, that's sort of another instance of social media and platforms where we help to understand each other. You know, we help to understand, you know, like the Jewish identity, or the Asian American identity, or the African American identity, or the gay or lesbian or bisexual identity, or the trans identity. And people who kind of have, you know, these perspectives that we may not be privy to because of our position on the planet. You know, technology is good for that. And I think that, like, whenever we're brought towards these, I'm burping a lot tonight, brought towards these people, and we understand their perspectives and we learn about it, then we want to learn more about them, and we kind of want to share that information, right? You know, not just say, well, this person agrees with me. It's like, well, why would that person agree with you? Is it just because of happenstance, or is it because of their background and their perspective and their experiences? And I feel that, like, people who gleefully, you know, put up borders and walls against each other and kind of other people and label people, they do that because of a lack of exposure. They do that because of a lack of understanding, and they enjoy that lack of understanding because if they don't want to be told that there's nothing else that they need, that there's anything else that they need to understand. And that to me is kind of evil. I'll label that to be evil, because that to me is an indulgence in ignorance. And I don't know. It's like, why wouldn't you want to learn about other people if they are offering it to you on in a way which you could understand? And that kind of thing does make me want to clench my fist Arthur style and, you know, I told you not to touch it, that kind of thing. But really, I mean, that's when I get really upset. Where, like, you know, when there's blatant racism going on, and people say, "Well, think about it from this other side." It's like, no. Why won't you value me? You know, it's like Rebecca Sugar says, where it's like, you know, I want to feel that I exist, and I want people who feel that they want to feel that way to feel that way too. It's like that to me is like kind of the universal language of, you know, the existential quandary that a lot of us kind of have now that we have, you know, more language and, you know, better understanding of what anxiety is and what, you know, sort of, you know, like imposter syndrome and kind of, you know, the fear of not living up to one's expectations. We all kind of feel the same thing. We kind of put a phrase to it, but in the way that we kind of feel these similar feelings, we kind of share that experience, kind of, you know, kind of find our way out of this hellhole together. So why wouldn't you want to do that if people potentially feel the same way you do? Even if there are real differences, our anxieties can be similar, even if those reasons are different. And I think that recognizing that and kind of doing what we can to bridge those gaps and clinch that understanding to be almost telepathic is being a good person. Yeah, that's sort of a long-ass roundabout way to say it.
No, I liked it, because I think that it calls to mind, like, so that is, I mean, that is, I think that is kind of the best metric that perhaps we can produce, but how do we get there? And it's, well, work backwards from those relationships that you have and that I have, where, you know, with Cassandra, it's friendship. What do you get out of friendship? With Rachel Bloom, it's like a universe of entertainment. And so it's almost like if you want, bigots or whatever to have the United Nations, they have to think, what can these people do for me? Which sounds selfish, but I mean, essentially, like, that's what relationships are. They're give and take. But I mean, that's kind of the end goal, and we're still trying to fill in how we get there. But that's a starting point, or an end point, rather. But I mean, I think also, like, because I would agree, and I don't want to be this direct, but, you know, the conservative ideology is kind of based in ignorance. And I think that that's kind of why a character like Richard Spencer and Milo Yiannopoulos were kind of additionally troubling, because they kind of represented this face of, like, conservatism as, like, intellectual, which is, I thought, what they always hated. But I guess if it's convenient, then whatever.
Exactly.
It was, like, so frustrating, because it's just like, you, sure, like, you're college educated or whatever, but, you know, you don't have a lot of experience. And, you know, conservative people are always talking about experience and character and things like that. But, you know, the two wings or whatever, they define that differently, I guess. And they have their shortcomings both. But I think that exposure to different people is, you know, crucial. And so we can say that, yes, but then how do you reach that? And that's what I'm very interested in, the inroad, the actual inroads. And maybe those inroads do look kind of selfish. Like, you know, I connected in that sense to a character like Rachel Bloom, but it's because she sings and dances and shit. Like, she bends over backwards and is probably going to die in 5 years because she overworks herself to create this show. And like, that's the only way a woman could really get my attention to be like, I care about women now. But I mean, and I'm relatively good. Maybe I'm not a good person, but I'm better than a lot of other sexist guys. And so imagine all the bending over backwards to appeal to them. I don't know if you had anything more, but I was hoping that when it comes back to me, we could kind of wrap it up. I had some final thoughts.
Okay, well, I'm trying to think. I don't know. I don't know. What you said about, you know, conservatism kind of being rooted in ignorance, it really kind of is, because I was thinking about, I was listening to another NPR interview about investigating gun control, because it was after the one in Las Vegas, but before the one in Texas, shooting incident. And Terry Gross had said to, I forget the person, he was a journalist, and she says, you know, I've interviewed a lot of people who've got to investigate the gun industry. This is a subject I've talked about before many times over the years. I don't understand why the gun industry is so powerful with lobbyists and the GOP, and why they have such a hold on them. And the guy's like, you know, there's no real one answer. It's just the fact that, like, people in the gun industry find it to be a way of life. It is a religion. It is a thing where people, you know, they want guns to be normalized. It's not about public safety. It's not about, you know, background checks or, you know, safety or weigh-in appearances. They want guns to be everywhere as possible as a way of life. And they're it's that kind of thinking, like safety and more prevention of more shootings is not even in their thought, because that goes against everything that they believe in. It's a type of religion. And I'm thinking, but that goes against the foundation of knowledge that we want to better ourselves as a society, i.e., make us live longer. And it's that kind of thing where it's like that is so suicidal in. You know, sort of like that is so like anti-enlightenment. You know, I don't get how people kind of come up that way. And it's like, well, by that point, do we just pull the trigger and kind of cast them off? Well, we can't. We got to do the hard work and kind of, you know, bridge the understanding. And so it's like, I guess being a good person is battling ignorance, because ignorance, you know, leads to evil, because evil can only be wrapped up in selfish. The evil is always kind of, you know, wearing, you know, is always, you know, being selfish, wearing kind of, you know, flashy clothes or whatever. And I think that, like, if you just make people understand, then you're however much of a micron closer towards ending evil, because shared understanding does save lives and, you know, pass laws and stuff. And I think that, like, in this era where we're battling fake news, that understanding and recognizing what is actually real helps that be a much easier fight.
Mm. Yeah, I'd agree with that. Although, I mean, you said that, you know, you're pretty good when it comes to, like, fake stories and recognize them right away. I'm pretty gullible, actually. But, yeah, so at the start, you had also said that, you know, it's hard when it comes to the question that we're posing this week. You kind of can't conclude, like, I am a good person, because, I mean, that doesn't sound right. And that's not how we were brought up, even generally, as Americans. As shitty as we are, that's definitely one of our values, is to not be – we consider that rude, I guess, and maybe everybody around the world does. But we also can't really say that we're bad people, because then it's just like we just leave it at that. And I think that as guys who are also straight, which is two notches, very significant. Like, it's – to have a podcast like this where we can air – our evils as we had earlier and as we maybe did a little bit tonight, that does come from a place of privilege where, assumingly, if we have an audience, you would still listen to us no matter what we say in terms of how we defame ourselves variously. And I've been thinking about this recently, because I know that I talked about Mary Elizabeth Winstead on an earlier episode and how I just used to talk about her constantly. And I just wish there was some, like, retribution or, you know, consequence for that, but there just couldn't be. Like, there's no way that I can just be punished for my sexism, because it just doesn't, there's just nothing you could do to me. And I don't know. It's just weird. Like, I mean, cause it's like, what are you going to do if you're Mary Elizabeth Winstead? Are you going to beat the shit out of me for being kind of a creep? Like, no, because I might get off on that. Like, that's the problem. That's the problem with a lot of the sexism, at least as far as I see it. Like, it's just kind of the infrastructure for not being a sexist weirdo is just not there. Like, we don't have a lot of motivations going the opposite way. And so for me, the only thing I have is that, for example, Rachel Bloom, like, cancels out Mary Elizabeth Winstead in a sense, in my crazy, like, lexicon of understanding things. Because here's a woman who, like, and I remember talking about this, like, very attractive, but for more than her body. And so that meant a lot to me, that my heterosexuality, which I always think is disgusting, can be at least a little bit more multidimensional. And if that's true for me, then it can be true for other people. But still, like, that's the only thing I have in terms of wanting to not be sexist in this case, is just is that kind of positivity. And maybe it's the same thing. Like, I wouldn't want Cassandra or Rachel Bloom to find out that I was like a super sexist guy or whatever, because then they would like go away or shun me, like I was expecting from the I Have thing. I guess that would be it. And then at that point, we've circled around to that earliest point of we're no longer building bridges, because at some point you cannot contain Kevin Spacey and Roger Ailes, certainly, in our utopia. So yeah, it's complicated.
It's interesting, because I think it does kind of come down to, like, what will you do in the depths of your masturbation, like you mentioned last episode. It's like, I work for the Batman universe, and I have nothing to do with the Flash. So at Comic Con, we've never really interviewed any of the Flash people. I would love to, because I find Candace Patton to be ungodly hot. Yes. And she's also I always say the second, because, you know, because I'm heterosexual, but, like, she's also a really talented actress, and she won the Saturn Award last year for, I think, the supporting actress. Like, she deserves it. She was really good. If I were ever to interview her, you know, like, I would have bragging rights, like, oh, yeah, I interviewed the sexy Candace Patton, but I would just, like, beyond, like, you know, like making sure I don't, you know, drool in front of her or anything like that, I would just ask her stuff that, like, to kind of engage her and kind of really be interesting, rather than, so what's Candace, or so what's Iris up to this season of The Flash? I would ask that kind of stuff, because, you know, because they do all these kind of press junkets all the time. They're always tiring and kind of repetitive. I always try to, like, engage people, kind of make them feel worthwhile. Kind of what I was mentioning earlier in the episode, kind of just at least, I don't know, kind of, you know, not, let's not go through the motions of existence and kind of put that on the back. Like, I remember whenever I was asking, when I was interviewing the cast and crew of Superman Universe in 2016, I was interviewing the voice of the Gems, and I remember specifically with Dee Dee Magnol-Hall and Michaela Dietz, I was asking them questions, you know, questions that I thought would be good questions, but that was my first time interacting with people from the crew, and I'm such a fan of that show, I tried to just be a really good professional press guy, and in that way, I remember walking away from that fearing that, like, you know, well, I was asking questions and kind of just being very, very clinical. I hope they know that I'm a fan of the show. But this wasn't just some sort of assignment, like, because it was that kind of conflation. But it's like, you know, I always, you know, because there's always this kind of thing where it's like, you know, I am an aspiring feminist and all that kind of stuff. But I do find women to be very, very. If I find them to be very attractive, I find them to be very, very sexy, and I want to look at them and fantasize about, like, all the kind of stuff. All that is still there, you know. I make pains. I don't say make pains, but, like, you know, I don't harass them. I don't try to bother them. I don't try to, you know, kind of, you know, take away their agency from my sexual gratification. But I still have, you know, the end of the level desires that a heterosexual man has. It's like, so where does that, how does that conflict with my feminism? Am I always bumping into that? Yes. And how do I match that? Well, I don't know. And I don't want it to depend on the woman to tell me. I guess it's, you know, it is that sort of, you know, kind of different question that I just don't know how to answer at all. I don't know. I genuinely don't. I'm ending this not knowing. And, you know, I'm not proud of that. That's such kind of a crappy way to end the question, end the episode. But that's as truthful as I can be.
And that's all we can ask, I think. Perhaps questions. We have more questions. So
the new adventures.
Dear listener, from the bottom of my heart, if you can formulate a way that I can feel better about myself for being a dick, please. Because I guess that's kind of what I was asking. But yeah, I don't know. It's hard. I mean, self-reflection, I think, maybe is not always attractive, because it, you know, it dredges up the worst elements of you, and those are hard to confront. And then to just have no societal basis for where to go from there is that is kind of hard, I guess. That's my struggle, I guess.
Yeah.
Not really.
The utopic future like of Star Trek itself, which actually really isn't, but whatever, like it's cheating. It's cheating because we don't know how to get there.
Right, exactly. How, Mr. Roddenberry?
Yes.
But yeah, so. So, next week on the docket, Donovan, care to do the honors?
Yes. Well, I have the file in my hand right here, and it seems that like our case for next episode's exciting adventure will be how can creators avoid the stereotype? In storytelling, you know, people exist and we're not Martians. So how would we write the black person or the Asian person or the woman or any of our favorite non-white, non-male, non-cishet minority class, or even getting those correctly when they're interacting with each other. This is another storytelling type of episode where we will kind of deep dive, if we have each other's consent, to...
strangle you.
No! Well, we're going to kind of talk about that and kind of ponder it. And that'll be a fun one. We'll probably bring up examples. I always love doing that. And kind of think about, you know, how can storytellers avoid stereotypes if they want to be good storytellers? Hooray for repetition. So that will be on the lookout for that episode then. In the meantime, you can check us out on the Book of Faces, our Facebook page. And comment on this episode and comment on or post ideas for topics if they strike your brain. Email in at qnoanswers@gmail.com. Leave us comments on the website. Check us out on Twitter and or Facebook. And anything else you want to talk about, Harry, before we end this one?
I can't even apologize to a woman because of the fucking kink. I am so tired of being this guy. Later!
Bye-bye!
When the pimp's in the crib, ma, drop it like it's hot, drop it like it's hot, drop it like it's hot. When the pigs try to get at you, park it like it's hot, park it like it's hot, park it like it's hot. If a nigga get an attitude, pop it like it's hot, pop it like it's hot, pop it like it's hot. I got the rollie on my arm and I'm pouring Sean down and I'm over best weed cause I got it going on. I'm a nice dude with some nice dreams. See these ice cubes, see these ice creams. Eligible bachelor, $1 million bow. That's whiter than what's spilling down your throat. The phantom, exterior like fish eggs. The interior like suicide was red. I can exercise you, this could be your phys ed. Cheat on your man, man, that's how you get a his head. Killer with the B, I know killers in the street. But still to make you feel like chinchilla in the heat. So don't try to run up on my ear talking all that raspy shit. Trying to ask me shit. When my niggas feel your vest, they ain't gon' pass me shit. You should think about it, take a second. Matter of fact, you should take 4B and think before you fuck with little skateboard B. When the pimp's in the crib, ma, drop it like it's hot, drop it like it's hot, drop it like it's hot. When the pigs try to get at you, park it like it's hot, park it like it's hot, park it like it's hot. If a nigga get an attitude, pop it like it's hot, pop it like it's hot, pop it like it's hot. I got the rollie on my arm and I'm pouring Sean down and I roll up that weed cause I got it going on. I'm a gangster, but y'all knew that. The big boss dog, yeah, I had to do that. I keep a blue flag hanging on my backside, but only on the left side. Yeah, that's the crip side. Ain't no other way to play the game the way I play. I cut so much you thought I was a DJ. Two, one, yo, three. S, C, and double O, P, D, O, double G. I can't fake it, just break it. And when I take it, see, I specialize in making all the girls get naked. So bring your friends, all of y'all come inside. We got a world premiere right here, not yet live. So don't change the diesel, turn it up a little. I got a living room full of fine dime bristles. Waiting on the fizzle, the dizzle, and the shizzle. G's to the biz act, now ladies, here we guess em. When the pimp's in the crib, ma, drop it like it's hot. Drop it like it's hot. Drop it like it's hot. When the pigs try to get at you, park it like it's hot. Park it like it's hot. Park it like it's hot. If a nigga get an attitude, pop it like it's hot. Pop it like it's hot. Pop it like it's hot. I got the rollie on my arm and I'm pouring Sean down and I roll up best weed cause I got it going on. I'm a bad boy with a lot of hoes. Drive my own cars and wear my own clothes. I hang out tough, I'm a real boss. Big Snoop Dogg, yeah, he's so sharp. On the TV screen and in the magazines. If you play me close, you want a red bean. Oh, you got a gun, so you wanna pop back. AK-47, now nigga, stop that.
you, then dance to this motherfucking music we crave to. Subscribe, nigga, get your issue. Baby, come close, let me see how you get loose.
When the pimp's in the crib, ma,
drop it like it's hot. Drop it like it's hot. Drop it like it's hot.
When the pigs try to get at you,
park it like it's hot. Park it like it's hot. Park it like it's hot.
And if a nigga get an attitude,
pop it like it's hot. Pop it like it's hot. Pop it like it's hot.
I got the rollie on my arm and I'm pouring Chandon. And I hold up that weed cause I got it going on.